What is up, everybody, and welcome back to Laying the Points with Farley Betts. My name is Chris R. Farley, a.k.a. at Farley Betts on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Award-winning sports bettor, won circa fifth place, 2021, 114K cash prize. A career 57% winning percentage in the NBA. I'm on the BetUS NBA show. We have collaborations with a lot of different sports books, including BetUS. This podcast is brought to you by BetUS Sportsbook. Go to BetUS and type in the promo code Farley125. That's F-A-R-L-E-Y-125 and get a 125% bonus when you deposit for the first time. Holy hell. Even if you have DraftKings or FanDuel or PointsBet or any other sports book in your back pocket, it's not a bad idea to have more in your back pocket so that you can shop for more lines. That's how you win in this industry, is getting the best number. And I know BetUS was really beneficial throughout the NFL season. They've been beneficial during the NBA season. Great lines, especially for the underdog. Check them out and put in that promo code Farley125 to support this podcast so we can keep these free picks and great guests coming at you every single week. Great show today. We have Sam Wagman from the Game Day HQ, sports content editor over there, provides golf picks, NFL picks, and we talk a little bit of both on this show. I don't know much about betting golf, so he gives us an overview of his approach to betting on golf successfully. And we also go over the PGA Championship, what he's looking for, who he's looking at betting on. And then we get to some NFL win totals from a sharp NFL bettor and Philadelphia Eagles fan. I seem to attract these Eagles fans into my life. That's fine. Great conversation. And hey, there's no denying Philly is flying high right now. Probably going to have another big year, but we'll get to that later. Really quick rant from me after watching the Nuggets and Lakers game last night. Not surprised at all the way the Nuggets started off that game. They have crushed teams in the first half in the first two series, and they did it again to the Lakers last night. Jokic was at the top of his game. So funny, on the BetUS NBA show, I cautioned our viewers on betting for his rebounds and betting on his PAR, betting on his triple-double. All those things hit tremendously easy last night, as he had one of the best games probably of his career. But he was magnificent. Nuggets offense was really humming, especially in the first half. But I know you all noticed what I noticed, right? As the game went on, and we expected this, right? Our angle, we bet on the Nuggets first half and we bet on the over, was that the Nuggets, they kind of shock teams at first when you first play them, especially in Denver, especially a Lakers team that hasn't played Denver since January 9th up until last night, right? So it was expected that the Nuggets would have a lot of offensive success. But you saw, as that game went on, Lakers starting to figure things out, outscored the Nuggets 72-60 in the second half, started to expose matchups. Rui Hachimura started to cook. LeBron James started to put in more. Anthony Davis caught a little stride in the second half. That's no joke, scoring 72 points on the Nuggets. The Nuggets defense will be a problem. And a little free pick for y'all. I'm only looking at the Lakers in game two. Looked like they were really figuring things out as that game was ending. LeBron had that look, that gleam in his eye again. And this is what the Lakers do now. They won one game early on the road in Golden State. They did the same to Memphis. Do not be surprised if they win game two. I think they're going to cover the +5.5. I already took them at that number. I like that number. Maybe sharps like Denver, and that goes up a little bit, and we get an even better number. But three-possession game, 2-3-possession game. I'll take the Lakers, who are starting to catch their stride. And I especially like what I see between Anthony Davis and LeBron James, because even if Anthony Davis is struggling, they have that chemistry that we saw in the bubble a few years ago that worked out for the Lakers, right? That I don't think that was a complete joke, right? Everyone's like, well, the bubble doesn't count. Well, it kind of counts, okay? You're still playing basketball against pros. And when Anthony Davis and LeBron James have the same game plan, where you can see that they're on the same page, and there's that symbiotic chemistry going on between them. They're always looking at each other, talking to each other. LeBron's probably talking up AD a lot, but AD looks more confident. He looks like he's got more of a dog in him in these playoffs. Healthiest stretch that he's had in a long time, right? If he starts to catch his rhythm, the Lakers will beat the Nuggets, period. That's how good Anthony Davis is, and that's how good the Lakers are at this point, the depth on that team. And I know I should probably be talking more about the Nuggets. They looked fantastic. We know that their offense is elite, especially at home. Like all those numbers, right? Top five in two-point shooting percentage, top five in three-point shooting percentage. Most of those numbers are skewed and making them look so elite because of how they play at home. They play well on the road, not as well as they do at home, though. They're electric at home, 34-7 in the regular season, and they have yet to lose in these here playoffs. But I believe in this Lakers team so much. I think this Lakers team has so much depth and talent, and you could see them starting to piece together and strategize improvements, obviously, on their offense, dropped 72 points in the second half. But you started to see it on defense, too. Things started to get a little harder for Jokic, a little harder for Michael Porter Jr., for Jamal Murray. Don't be shocked if the Lakers come in really strong in game two. That should be a great series. Boston and Miami tonight. You can catch what I have to say on the BetUS NBA show about that game. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Wagman from the Game Day HQ joins us today. Talk PGA Championship and NFL win totals. Swagman 95. Here we go. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Laying the Points with Farley Betts. Great guest for this week on Laying the Points, Sam Wagman. Sports content editor at the Game Day HQ, and also a staff writer at Football Guys. And we've connected a while back, Sam. Love your content on Twitter. I know you're always churning in the sports betting world. And I'm bringing you here to talk a little PGA Championship because I got to say, I don't have a lot of experience betting golf. I mean, I've followed a few guys who I thought were sharp in the past. No success whatsoever. So maybe you can give our audience a better outlook for the PGA Championship. Also a Football Guys, we can get into some NFL at the end of this podcast. As we get started here, just tell the audience, and by the way, you can catch him at Swagman95. I love that handle. Swagman, that's good. You can catch him at Swagman95 on Twitter. But tell the audience how you got into this sports betting world, man, because it is a crazy world, and everybody has a good story.
Yeah, and I feel like my story is a lot similar to, you know, a lot of younger kids who, you know, have a friend group when they're younger. You know, you bet quarters and nickels on things. For me, it was poker when I was much younger. I got into poker when I was in summer camp when I was 10 or 11 years old. My old camp counselor at the time was a big poker player, and you like organized like little like bunk like. Poker games, and it was like quarters and nickels and stuff like that, and that translated to playing games with my friends, and then we would bet a dollar here on something, and it goes up and up and up as a way to first get snacks and then get lunch money and then whatever it is, and all of a sudden you're betting whatever it is on like poker games with your friends when we're in our 20s, but I got into sports betting around the time I graduated high school, about 8-9 years ago, and I really didn't get truly into it until I went to college. And colleges are where a lot of these bookies sprung up, like these offshore books, whatever it is, they spring into these colleges, and everyone in the fraternity gets a sports book or whatever it is, and everyone knows everyone. So that's how it happened for me, and it really was just simple, and kind of just evolved from there, and really got into it heavily in the last couple of years as sports books began to legalize in states, and so much stuff happened there. And the more people know about it, the more you get to read about it and the more you get to learn about it. So it's just, for me, it's just honing skills and, becoming a better and, a more informed better at that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there your studies in college, did they like kind of lead you in this direction in some way? Like, were you a finance and stats guy or anything like that?
No, I was a journalism major in college before I shifted to a business and marketing degree. And you know, for me, it really wasn't about that. I've just always been a sports nut. Yeah. And, you know, truthfully, I have a little bit of an addictive personality. So once I get into something, I like to, you know, I kind of dive into it. And, you know, that's everything. That's whether, you know, I found a sport that I liked or an activity I liked. Sports betting is, you know, been something that I've casually enjoyed for years at this point. And the fact that some of these offshore sports books have allowed you to bet $5 and $10 minimum on a thing is really nice, because it allows you to feel like you're not spending a lot of money there. So
yeah, absolutely. I love that you bring up the addictive personality, because I think that's an aspect for a lot of us, right? I mean, mm-hmm. gambling, betting, it's a very stimulating activity. You know, you think of it at first like, hey, I can get cash pretty quick here. But then as you start to study and learn more about it, you know, I know for me, over 10 years ago now, but you sort of gravitate towards certain approaches to sports betting. Mm-hmm. And the way that, you know, I have a philosophy and psychology background, also journalism too is in there. And I know that I'm a writer first. So when I first started handicapping, I would write out my complete handicap. And if it didn't sound like it flowed, if the, you know, equation didn't add up to a real good bet, sometimes I would delete that whole thing, right? But if you can write it out first and the narrative, like, it makes sense to you, it delivers all the pieces you're putting together, I think that's a great, you know, process to kind of add for a lot of people out there. If you're not as statistically driven, you know, just use your writing skills, you know, kind of piece together everything. I know the statistical part is harder for me than most too. I'm not somebody who like runs models or, you know, things right. like that. But also, I like to bring up this study, Sam, and you know, don't quote me on this. I don't know the source, but I know it's a real thing. There was a longitudinal study done in the UK on alcoholics.
Okay.
Because you obviously have addictive personalities. And pairing with that addictive gene, because it is a gene, is also more resiliency, right? They're more resilient typically. You need resiliency in the gambling industry, that's for sure, especially with all the losses. I mean, if you're good, you're still losing 45% of the time, right?
Right.
So it's a lot to stomach. But
I definitely think there's a you know, there's a narrative based aspect to it. You know, for me, you know, and I apply this more to NFL than anything else. And you know, I have a feeling that you probably do as well, given that you know your background in ATS betting. But my thing is that I want to look for a reason why, you know, because any guy can bet the entire NFL slate, you can bet all 13, 14 games and, you know, pick a spread on either side. But I want to look at a reason why a bet seems mispriced.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, that's what it is. You know, as we get better, as we get more informed on sports betting, you know, we want to look for reasons to find value. We don't want to just bet something to bet something when you start to, kind of go down the "do I have a problem" route, but no. If you're looking for something that has value and you can kind of lay out a reason why does this have value, why is this mispriced, and like you said, if you can write out, you know, a reasoning about it as to why it's mispriced and why it makes sense to bet it, then it's probably a good bet.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said. I mean, if I was on this podcast even five years ago, my processes wouldn't be as crisp, and that whole, you know, what you're saying, right? Finding an edge, that's really what it's all about, you know, at the end of the day, or else you might have to have that conversation. Do you have a problem? I've had the conversation with myself before, and it's taken a lot of hard lessons, right, to get to the point where you realize that this is the way to approach handicapping and sports betting. I got to bring this up too, Sam. I also see that Philadelphia Eagles helmet in the background. You're a Northeast boy?
Yes, I'm from Philadelphia. Nice. Whole family is originally from Philadelphia. I grew up in South Jersey as an Eagles fan, obviously. And apart from the Florida Panthers, I root Philadelphia sports across the board.
Man, Florida Panthers on one hell of a run right now. I got some South Florida buddies, and they're going nuts. You know, between the Heat and the Panthers, what a run!
Yeah, it's been great because the Flyers are just a miserable team to follow. So, you know, all my friends are Panthers fans. They drag me to games. And what can I say? The fan base like started to gravitate on me. And now that I go to a few games every year. I went to a game last week. I went to the only game they lost to the Maple Leafs, in the 4-1 series. I'm going to game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The first home game. So, you know, if you want a sure thing, bet against the Panthers in that game.
Okay, got it. Yeah, man. Were you, I don't know if you saw any of my tweets or content last football season on the Eagles, but I was pretty critical. Did you absolutely hate me in the fall?
No, I mean, you're a Giants fan, so you know, I think you're biased. So
I'm probably a little biased, but you know, I said it before, right? Jalen Hurts played so well throughout the whole season, but it's like we haven't like seen him against really hard teams one after another. Well, I was completely silenced because in the biggest game of all games, you could argue that he had a better game than Patrick Mahomes. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, right, Patrick Mahomes, he got the win. The problem isn't Jalen Hurts, but they're certainly going to have a harder schedule this year. But we'll get to the NFL a little bit later on the show. Yes, a Giants fan, but I try to be unbiased about Philly. I grew up about an hour west of Philly most of my life. You know, born in the North Jersey, whole family's from that area. That's why I'm a Giants fan. Right. I grew up around those damn Eagles. So I unfortunately know the Eagles as well as the Giants most seasons because they're so close to home still.
Yeah. And I think you're going to get a really good chance to see what kind of team the Eagles are this offseason, or not this offseason, this regular season, because they do have, you know, a pretty decently hard schedule, including an extremely hard stretch. I believe it's weeks 8 to 12 or 8 to 11, where they play the Chiefs, they play the 49ers, they play the Cowboys twice, they play the Bills. So that's gonna be a really tough slate of the schedule. I don't know why I just said the Bills, they don't play the Bills, but it's gonna be really tough, and I think that's, you're gonna see what the Eagles metal is really made of there.
Yeah, I think they could open up 6-0. It's a pretty favorable schedule in the beginning, and they, you know, they might need to do that to have the same record as last year. We shall see. All right, let's talk a little golf, Sam. I know I always say this in every show. I like to keep it 30 minutes, but I often go over 30 minutes. We'll try to keep it within that time frame. But I was talking to you before the show about this too. I'm not a golf bettor. I never give out plays to my premium clients on it. It's just a sport that I've kind of left to the side as I focus more on basketball and football. So let's start with this high level for our audience who has not bet on golf before. PGA Championships this week. What is your, like, how do you approach betting golf? What are some of the bets that you look for? How do you look for value? And what are some of the do's and don'ts? And it's a loaded question, but, you know, from like a high level perspective.
It is. And I guess we should kind of start from the back there, the do's and don'ts of betting golf. The biggest thing for me is that, and honestly, has been imparted to me multiple times. I have a few good buddies who I talk to quite frequently and have really kind of drilled this into my head because I'm still a fairly new golf bettor as well, only having picked it up in the last 2 years. But really, my approach to betting golf successfully is you can't get addicted to all the stats. And you have to remember that golf is as much a mental game as it is a statistical one. And what I mean by that is that there's a ton of narrative in golf. And, you know, the mental thing plays a huge role because all of this is between the ears for these guys. You know, whether they hit a good shot, whether they hit a bad shot, how their response is to a good shot or bad shot. Because anybody can rely on the stats and see, oh, this guy is great on this kind of greens. And this guy's great, you know, when the fairways are tight and the trees are narrow. And, you know, he's great at getting out of bunkers. But how they actually perform when they get on the course is as much and probably more a mental state as it is a physical state and statistical state. So, you know, looking at, you know, stats-based analysis and then matching it up with a narrative and mental view, you know, how is their recent form look? How does their course fit look? Have they played here before? What was their play here at the previous time? Was there a reason that they played a certain way? What's their motivation? Are they, you know, is there an award they're going for? Is there, you know, a membership they're going for? Do they get into the FedEx Cup playoffs if they win this? You know, so many things go into it, and there's a lot more, you know, peripheral things to look at rather than the stats that are right in front of you.
Okay. Yeah. So very interesting. That almost sounds like horse racing, you know, a little bit, right? Like, you know, what have these horses done for me lately? What have they done recently? Now, of course, you know, not quite, of course, you got the jockeys and all kinds of other things, but so leading into an event like this, and I'm going to talk really naive here, okay, so bear with me. Mm-hmm. But, like, leading into a major, are there a bunch of, like, smaller competitions that you're watching these golfers, like, leading up to that every single time beforehand? Or is it, like, major season one after another?
No, it's there's definitely competitions beforehand. The majors are pretty spread out. The Masters is in early April. The PGA Championship is in mid-May. And then the middle of June and middle of July are the U.S. Open and Open Championships. And you have events every week. So there's a few weeks spread out, you know, between each major. But this is major season. This is what these guys are playing for. They'll skip certain events if it suits them. But a lot of players like to do tune-up events. Like last week, Scottie Scheffler and John Rahm and Rory McIlroy were not in the field at the Byron Nelson, but Scottie Scheffler was, mostly because it's his hometown of Dallas, and he always likes to show up there. And it's the place where he got his first start. When he was a teenager, you know, it holds sentimental value. There's other places where John Rahm played and Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy took the week off, you know, so these guys are pretty deliberate in what they'll do. And I'm not looking at as much as that. I'm looking more in, you know, in line at these designated events, which are 11 elevated events by the PGA Tour this season that pay more money in the prize pool. All the better players are in it. So I want to see against those fields, obviously, because, you know, an event where Scottie Scheffler is the overwhelming favorite and is at, you know, 2.5 to 1 doesn't really impress me that much when, you know, only 8 of the top 100 guys in the world are there. And Scottie didn't even win that. You can argue, you know, he had a chance to win last week, but he didn't. And, you know, but you can take things from minuscule pieces. Like last week, Scottie's putting looked atrocious. It was arguably the main reason why he didn't win last week. Am I holding that against him going into a major title where a big emphasis is the fact that the greens have been firmed up to the point where they're going to run faster than they ever have, and these greens are smaller? Absolutely. Do I take into account the fact how good putting John Rahm was at the Masters and Scottie Scheffler wasn't? Absolutely. Do I take into account that Rory McIlroy probably needs a therapist at this point? Absolutely. So, you know, these are all, you know, you can take little things in, especially, you know, the bit about Rory is a whole mental health thing. Rory is, you know, you said you're not as in tune to golf. Rory McIlroy has become the face of the PGA Tour versus the LIV Golf thing. And I'm assuming you at least have some knowledge about the LIV Golf and PGA yes. Tour schism. Yeah. So Rory McIlroy has become the PGA Tour's face. And with that comes a lot of other duties that he never had to assume before in his career. And that's obviously taken a mental and, you know, playing, you know, toll on him. So he hasn't played well. You know, he didn't make the cut at the Masters, hasn't played well the last, you know, few times he's been out there. So a lot of people have just no interest in him, despite the fact that he's a member at Oak Hill. His wife is from the Rochester area. He's probably more familiar than every single other player in this field with the course. But nobody has any confidence in his recent form lately. So a lot of people are going to leave him off their card at that. And that's why his number keeps sinking. So you can definitely take into account, you know, what these guys have done leading up to a major event.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, you're making me want to get into it because, you know, it's like tennis. It's like boxing, UFC, right? There's so much just on an individual, you know, human behavior and personality psychology that leads up that can give you some, you know, little hints and clues about what is this person's perspective heading into it. And you know, that's the side of sports that I really love. And I think that's why I like the NBA and the NFL so much, is because they're like damn soap operas where, you know, you can kind of pick up, even if a team isn't doing really well lately, do they have the pedigree? Do they have the leadership, you know, the chemistry, et cetera, to step up when it matters? Some of these guys, you know, like McIlroy, sounds like, you know, not set up very well leading up to this, but he has a lot of familiarity, a lot of reasons to like him, and therefore maybe he does have more value than usual, right? Mm-hmm. But about the LIV and the PGA, you mentioned that the PGA is upping their cash prizes. Is that because of the LIV effect?
Yeah, it definitely has something to do with it. You know, so a big issue on the PGA Tour for the last several years has been, you know, not for the top guys, but more the working class guys, you know, the guys who are outside of the top 50 and, you know, down to like the 200s, those guys that show up at every single tournament every week, have to grind, have to get in, you know, whether it's on sponsor exemptions or, you know, have to get in on merit, but, you know, by qualifying. The PGA, those guys are every golfer on the PGA Tour is an independent contractor. They're not salaried employees. So they have to pay their own way for everything. That's travel. That's accommodations. That's food. That's their caddy. Everything. So a big thing on the PGA Tour was it's really hard for these guys to get paid. And even though a lot of them probably make around 500, 600 grand a year, a lot of that goes out travel, food, accommodations, caddy expenses. So that, you know, that might take 200-300 grand, maybe more off the top. And, you know, when you're doing that, it's really hard to kind of make a living as a golfer, you know, and the PGA Tour is especially demanding because of all the travel that you're doing, you know, a tournament every week. So they wanted to make, you know, these designated events. So they elevated a certain amount of events and, you know, the qualifying is a little bit different for them. You get invited if you're in the top 100, and then they have, you know, some of the auxiliary guys on the exit, and they up the prize pools dramatically in these events. They might have gone from, you know, 7-8 million to 20 million in some cases. You know, the winner gets 3.6 million as opposed to maybe 1.1, 1.2 million in past years. It's the prize pools are absolutely huge. And that was definitely done because LIV is just throwing money at golfers who, you know, a lot of them arguably don't deserve it.
Yeah, interesting. I'm aging myself a little bit here, but this is sounding like WWE versus WCW back in the day. You know, wrestlers starting to go over to WCW because they actually gave them guaranteed money. You know, more of a,
exactly what this is.
Yeah, more of a compensation package, right? Where you're kind of on your own with WWE, and WWE had to change because of that, right? And that's what kind of what competition brings. You know, but maybe it does bring new motivational angles for some of these guys too, who stay associated and affiliated with the PGA. Mm-hmm. Let's get into some of your bets for this. I saw you wrote an article, and you can check that out right now at thegameday.com. I'm not going to give you all the slashes for that, but Sam did share it on Twitter. So again, follow him, Swagman95. He's 95. I'm an 85 kid. So I had to ask him about that before the show. But let's get into some of your picks, Sam. Who do you like to win the PGA Championship, and what are some of your other high-value bets that you're bringing along?
Yeah, and look, you know, this is probably not my favorite bet. It's if you had to ask me who I absolutely think will win this event, I'm forced to say John Rahm. He's just the best player in the world right now, and he's got the second highest odds on the board to Scottie Scheffler, and he's 8-1 right now. That's over at DraftKings, but you know, it's really hard to pick anybody else besides Rahm. And I typically won't espouse taking the odds on favorite because how difficult it is to win a golf tournament, especially a major with 150 plus golfers in the field. But Rahm is just by far the best player in the world. He's playing better than anybody else right now. He ranks first in strokes gained total in major tournaments over the past 5 years. He's honestly just the perfect fit for Oak Hill. Now, you know, getting into some of Oak Hill, it's a long course. The bunkers are deep. The greens are smaller. You know, there's trees lining both sides. This is in upstate New York. So, you know, you're going to have a lot of forestry up there. And you really need to be great off the tee. And that's both from a driving distance and driving accuracy perspective, both of which Rahm ranks in the top quarter of the league or the tour in. And look, of the last 16 major winners, 7 of them have been 20-1 or shorter odds. So you really have to take into account that on any given day, there might be 10 guys who can realistically win this tournament. You don't typically see guys from the middle of the odds boards win these tournaments. You either see guys who are completely out of left field, like Phil Mickelson in 2021 when he was 250-1 to win the PGA Championship and he won, or you'll see a single digit favorite like John Rahm winning the Masters at 9-1. Back, you know, last month in April. And I just tend to think it's the shorter, you know, sure, anything can happen. It is a major, and this is going to be a course where the scores are a lot lower than normal. You know, we're talking, you know, last year's winner, Justin Thomas, he was 5-under and he won the PGA Championship at a different course, but still, you know, and you know, when the last time the PGA Championship was hosted at Oak Hill was in 2013, and Jason Duffner won at 10-under, but that's only because he shot a course record 63 in the second round, which was 7-under at the time. So that probably would have been single digits as well. you know, if he hadn't shot that. So it's hard to score on these courses. They do this for a reason. You know, these Northeast courses, they're tough. The rough is long. You know, if you get into trouble off the tee, it's going to be really tough to get a good score on any of these holes.
So if it's going to be like a tighter race, like you said, then is there more perceived value or just like inherent value in some of the long shots in that case? You know, since it is, I mean, I know the level of difficulty is way up there, but the, you know, sounds like the margin of victory is very tight, right? From what you're saying. So would you think there's any more value with a long shot?
Yeah, I think with it not being as much a putting contest, you know, which we typically refer to some of these, you know, easier tournaments where the scores can get up into the, you know, the 20 unders and everything like that. There's definitely a little more variance to be had, but the course is just so difficult that you're going to need to be especially pinpoint. And to be honest, I just don't know if any of these guys that are going off, you know, at super long shots are really going to be there. And I took a couple. I always take a few long shots because really anything can happen. And, you know, I especially looked at some of the LIV guys as long shots because I tend to think they're undervalued apart from the top, you know, two or three guys like Koepka and Dustin Johnson. But I truly think that you see one of the more elite side of the odds board do better here just because of the inherent difficulty of this golf course. Like we saw Phil Mickelson finish second at the Masters and he's 52, but Augusta is a course that he has always played well. And even for being a major championship destination, Augusta is a pretty easy course. Mm-hmm. If you're used to it and you know it, like some of these pros do, which is why it was easy for him as, you know, it's a course he's won three times at, to have success, despite the fact that he was a super long shot and he, you know, one of the oldest golfers in the field. I just don't know if I feel the same way about Oak Hill. I think it's going to be a lot more difficult if you're not, you know, elite length off the tee, like some of these guys. And trust me, these guys who are long shots, they're not elite length off the tee because they're more in the older range.
Love it. I love it. And like we said, you can check out all of Sam's picks because I know you have some more free picks there at gameday.com. And again, follow him at Swagman95 to get all of his content right there in your feed. Let's get to some NFL, Sam, because I want to give us a few minutes at least to talk about that. You gave me a few teams that you might want to talk about, including your Philadelphia Eagles. I'll let you say whatever you want, but let's talk a little win total. What team you want to talk about?
I got to start with the Seahawks. And you know, looking at DraftKings right now, and this is a bet I took in February as soon as the win totals were out. So it was a little lower. I believe it was +110 when I took it over 8.5. But you know, right now it's -130 and I'm still ready to go there. I think the Seahawks are a better team than they were last year. And they won 9 games last year and they snuck into the playoffs and they put up a good fight against the 49ers, but this team got better. They drafted probably the best cornerback in the draft in Devin Witherspoon at number 5. And they drafted the best wide receiver in the draft at 20 in Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They brought back Geno Smith. They have, you know, all the pieces of defense. Bobby Wagner resigned. I mean, this is a team that is gearing up in a very, very weak NFC to try and make a playoff run. Nobody's saying they're going to win the division, despite, you know, I took them to win the division, you know, at 4.5-1 odds. Again, back in February, it's now down to +230. So, you know, score one for CLV there. But I really just think the Seahawks are a team that is going to overperform this year. And to me, they seem like the type of team that's, you know, easily going to get a wild card spot in the NFC. And I think they really do have a good shot to win the division because they're well coached. They have all the requisite talent. They brought nearly every single person back. The offensive line is getting better and has a little bit more experience. They brought another running back in to you know, help spell Kenneth Walker, and Zach Charbonnet was, you know, highly regarded by a lot of draft picks. And I think the defense is going to get better. I think they definitely should have gone defensive line at some point earlier than they did, but I don't think that's going to hurt them that much. You know, I think that offense is going to be really good.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, and they're in a division too, right, where I think the Cardinals are going to be a dumpster fire. They have so many depth issues on both sides mm-hmm. of the ball. You know, the Rams are, I mean, extremely shallow offensive talent. you know, we'll see. I mean, I, you know, I tend to trust Sean McVay and Stafford will be back, but you know, I don't think they're going to the playoffs necessarily. So really they just have to contend with the 49ers, you would think. Mm-hmm. And I haven't looked through their schedule completely yet. I'm going through all my teams and I started the A's, but you know, their schedule, is there, I mean, what other division do they face? Do you know that offhand?
I do not. I want to say it's the AFC North. Seahawks.
Okay. Schedule. Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, any division except the
yes, AFC it South, is the, you know, it is the AFC North. I'm looking at the schedule now. So they start off with the Rams, the Panthers, the Bengals, the Browns, the Commanders in their first five games. There's an avenue to them going possibly 4-1 there.
Yeah, I would say probably 3-2 more likely, but 4-1, yeah.
Yep, and then they play the 49ers twice in 3 weeks in November and early December. So that'll be a struggle. But they're,
I don't know why they do that. You know, they do that for the Giants and Eagles too. Giants and Eagles, mm-hmm. 3 weeks, two games in the final stretch of the season again, which is, that should be good football, you know, playoff, you know, contention, but spread it out a little bit. You know, these teams look so different at different parts of the year, but go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the Seahawks, you know, the Seahawks also drew the NFC East, which isn't great.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously we couldn't have known that when putting out this bet in February, but I still think you're going to hate me for saying that. I think the Giants are going to regress.
Yeah, no,
I think the Cowboys are going to regress.
Yeah.
Cause nobody has any faith in Mike McCarthy. Truthfully, I think there's a chance the Eagles could regress. When the last time the Seahawks played the Eagles, I didn't see the Eagles losing that game either, even though that was with Russell Wilson and, you know, Carson Wentz. But that was Wentz's MVP year. I don't think anybody saw us losing that game, and we did. But other than that, I think there are a lot of winnable games on the Seahawks schedule. So, you know, I really like that. That's probably my favorite win total bet. If I had to pick an under, it's probably the Cardinals.
Yeah.
You know, and that a bet I liked a lot more when it was 5.5. Now it's gone down to 4.5 and it's +110. So it's not as great, but this is a team that starts off three of their first five games are against the Cowboys, 49ers, and Bengals. And that's all in a row.
Yeah.
So that could be really tough for them. They start off with the Commanders and the Giants in weeks 1 and 2, and then they play a couple of divisional games against the Rams and Seahawks, and then they play the Ravens, the Browns. So there are a lot of options in terms of what I think the Cardinals can do. I tend to think Kyler Murray is going to miss most of the season, if not all of the season. I think they're going to be cautious with him.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, it depends what ownership wants to do with him. You know, if they think they're going to have a realistic shot at Caleb Williams, if they want to tear down and rebuild, they might just sit him all season and, you know, hope he's healthy enough for them to offload his contract in the 2023 offseason, you know, and then just move on with Caleb Williams. Cause I think there's a good chance they have the number one pick next year.
Yeah. I mean, Kyler Murray has more talent in, you know, his one hand than a lot of NFL players do in their entire body. But that kid, just like motivationally, game to game, how inconsistent he can be, mm-hmm. I would take Caleb Williams and his upside any day.
Yep.
Over, you know, like over what Kyler Murray can offer. I mean, watching Caleb Williams at USC. You know, glad that we get to see it again, because I think he's going to completely take over this year too. But a lot of great thoughts there, Sam, a wealth of gambling information, as I suspected, and we're going to close it out there, but I really want to have you back during the NFL season. I'll talk to you about it after the show. I'm not sure what you have planned, but I think you'd be a fantastic guest. We can rival over the Giants and Eagles. That's fine by me. I do my best when I have, you know, Eagles fans as friends, because they challenge my notions, right? So, yeah. And there's, you know, that's a great rivalry as always. I'm not necessarily expecting the Giants to have the edge this season. Don't worry,
but they won't anytime soon. Don't worry.
Yeah. I mean, the schedule this year for all the NFCs is going to be absolutely brutal. You know, so things are going to change on that end. alone just because of that. But Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. Again, at Swagman95 on Twitter. Love that handle. Check him out. We'd love to have you back anytime, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, man.